Okay, so I want us to begin just by closing our eyes and taking a few deep breaths just to get settled, allowing the nervous system to calm down. Just a few moments to focus on our breath. And just a moment to slow down. And while we're breathing in and out, I would like us to just focus for a moment on the mouth. You can breathe in and out through your nose if that makes it easier. But we're just going to bring all of our attention to our mouth. Thinking about its architecture, how it's constructed. And we can use the tongue to explore this architecture. The strange folds at the roof of the mouth. The soft hardness of our gums. The rubberiness of our cheeks. These strange bones that we call teeth. And I don't want you to focus too much on what their function might be, but really their form and their sensation, how they feel and how they might feel to be felt. What does your tooth feel like when you touch it with your tongue? What would it feel like to be your tooth being touched by your tongue? And the lips. The lips. This opening from the inside of the body, the outside of the world. We can press our lips together and explore all the shapes that our lips can make. And I want you to think for a moment about this mouth of yours. It's the very same mouth that you've had since you were about 5 weeks inside of another person. So not 5 weeks old in the world, but 5 weeks as a fetus, you began to have a mouth. And it's exactly that same mouth, very same mouth, which I'm using to speak with, which we use to eat, to kiss, to make sounds with. And I want us to rewind all the way through the ages. So from however old you are now, we're going to do a fast rewind backwards through your life. So to your 30s, your mouth in your 30s, in your 20s, your mouth in your 20s, your teens, perhaps without facial hair, or perhaps with a smaller, softer mouth, and into your childhood, even smaller still. And as a baby, your mouth, when it was just a baby mouth, the very same mouth. And you're going to go all the way back into the womb now. your mouth inside the womb, one with the amniotic fluid around it. Your mouth inside the womb, one with the amniotic fluid around it. And this mouth is constantly full. It is full with this fluid. And this mouth, it doesn't eat yet, it doesn't shout. Doesn't scream, but it does open and it closes. And I want us for a moment with our fetus mouth now to do a few of these openings and closings, just like we did when we were fetuses. Opening and closing. And exploring all the ways that we can open and close. Is it fast? Is it slow? Is it fluid or mechanical? Is it symmetrical? And what happens when we open? What comes in as we make space with our mouths? And with our mouths, we can drink the air now as we once drank the fluid around us.
With our mouths, we can drink the air now as we once drank the fluid around us.
And we can press our lips together. Some sounds might come out as we explore more all of the ways that the mouth might open and close and move. The sounds that are produced just by moving the mouth, not by any intention to make a sound, but just by the simple opening and closing, the explorations of all the ways that the mouth can open and close. And I want us to now forward the tape from inside the womb till birth. And from birth to that first moment that the mouth did in fact ingest, did in fact eat, whether it was from a breast or it was from a bottle. Nurture. And this sensation of sucking the nipple, sucking the bottle, exploring that movement and that position of the mouth. How does it feel and look and sound and taste to suck? What nutrients are coming into the body through this action? And what do we do in order to inhale this nutrition into our body? And as we make these movements with our mouth, I want us to recognize that the body, in fact, has many mouths. There are many, many mouths all over the body. We might tend to only use one, possibly two, but the body is full of mouths. The hands are mouths. And we're going to explore now with our hands, our fingers, the palms, what it is to suck with these hand mouths, swallowing the air, swallowing other parts of our own body, suctioning up the skin on our own body. Perhaps your hand mouth will start to eat the top of your head. And it might look like from the outside a massage, but it's actually just another one of your mouths eating yourself, eating the air. If you're close to someone else, you can eat them, suck them with your hands. And there are other mouths too. In the crook of the arm, right? The inside between the forearm and the bicep, there's a mouth. Your hand mouth can explore and kiss. It might wrap itself around another part of your body and begin to eat it. Continuing with both the hands and the crook of the arm. So these four mouths, and not forgetting the first one.
And the crook of the arm.
All of the mouths are opening.
Not forgetting the first one. And the crook of the arm.
And closing, taking as much in as they can. Ingesting and opening again, swallowing the world into all of these five mouths at once. And these mouths move in different directions and at different speeds, but they're all involved in this action of opening, swallowing, ingesting. And in the backs of the knees, we have mouths. And what we often call joints, when we think about the skeleton, can also be thought of as two mouths. Two mouths that swallow, and when they do, the hips also move, because the hips are also mouths. The hips swallow. The hips suck. The hips ingest. And the feet. Feet are mouths too. The feet can lay on the floor and they can suck the floor up into them as they swallow the floor. one foot can touch another foot, and it can wrap its whole mouth around the other foot and suck it completely inside. All of these mouths now opening out to the world, surrounding it and swallowing it in.
Hello, and everybody listening to Montez Press Radio. Thank you. I'm Sai, and we are in the studio with Emma and Lin-Yi Yuan. And we are going to be having our tongue-in-cheek first episode of this week. The second episode will be airing tomorrow. And this is Suckling Sound number 2. So, Emma, you take it away.
Thank you, Sai. So we're live. We're live from Montez Press Radio, 46 Canal. This month's episode on sucking and suckling sounds, the sequel, on watery bodies, hydrofeminisms, interphysiologies of lactation, cross species, flower teats, honey as milk, and milk honey, planetary wetness practices, aurality and amniotic musickings in and out of the womb, and links, both speculative and scientific, between infant feeding and infant babble. Juice practically pours through digital joints that deliver this episode to you. Elements of deep improvisational chance include a possible live suckle, a first or second, technically, for the radio, should our baby performer Keza Niampeta Wang be hungry enough to implore his mother, writer Mary Wang. Human milk, by the way, is bioactive tissue. And mouth sounds are the earliest form of comedy. Lin-Yi Yuan is next to me at the table, holding a breast pump, which looks almost like a microphone.
Or a gun. A water gun. A watery gun.
It'll be our drum set for the show. We also have, virtually, Jessica Kenny, a vocalist from Washington State, and choreographer Andros Sins Brown in the Belgian forest. That was Andros who guided us on an exercise that situated us in the actual and imaginary of the mouth and its time scales entailed. Are you both there? Andros and Jessica? Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay, can you hear us now? There is a great deal of feedback taking place, which is a little like
there are many of us.
we've multiplied. We've become pregnant with our own voices.
Exactly.
Andros, last time you led this exercise live to air in the first Suckling Sounds episode, I mentioned Juhani Palasma, the Finnish architectural theorist, Size of the Skin book, where he writes that our sensory experience of the world originates in the tactile origins of the mouth, and the world tends to return to its oral origins. The most archaic origin of architectural space is in the cavity of the mouth.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I think it's the first place where we touch ourselves. Right? The tongue is kind of this feeler to explore our inner bodies, and it's the first place that we come into contact with ourselves, and then consequently the first place that we come into contact with another body. And I like to think that that just continues to expand as we grow up, right? And we just try to develop as many mouths as possible. And I try to think about how the world might transform or open itself to us when we think about how we touch it with our hands, with our eyes, with our ears, with our mouths, as all being mouths. Go ahead.
I was also just thinking about how suckling is like one of the foundational things that connects us to all mammals. You know, every mammal upon delivery has a natural instinct to be able to root for the nipple and then suckle. And so it's really the first thing all mammals do upon entering into this kind of terrestrial plane.
I also learned that the etymology of latch comes from to grasp.
That makes sense.
Yes.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who's ever been around like a toddler, not a toddler, but like a crawling baby sees that literally their kind of immediate impulse is to put everything into their mouths. And I do think that the way that they experience the materiality at that age is really through the mouth.
Because sight is actually underdeveloped and delayed.
I think a lot of their sensory organs are still in process. But I do think because, you know, besides sex, like eating is the only thing we do that we engage all of our senses with. And so because of that, I do believe that like that's kind of the kind of entryway for us to really process, like sensory process. And this is not a scientific thing. This is as just somebody who researches and is a mother, but I do see that as a real way of my children exploring the world. I think about a post-plastics future even, and I wonder if it needs to begin with, you know, cutting out all plastic children's toys. Because mm-hmm. if their first kind of experience of the world is through, you know, plastic toys, then that's always going to be part of their kind of environmental understanding.
Mm-hmm. And there is so much less data contained in a bottle, in feed in a bottle top, for instance, than a breast itself. Complex yeah. process of attaching to breast and of shaping it, of a baby's mouth shaping.
Absolutely.
Nipple into form.
But also there's also, it's, you know, the nipple is an interface, right? Like there's, for example, my daughter has a lot of sniffles and is like kind of probably fighting off some sort of cold or something right now with the seasonal change. And it's incredible because I do body feed her. I'm able to, my nipple and my breast is able to process the kind of antibodies. My body is able to make antibodies for her because of the interface of the nipple, which is crazy.
And a baby's saliva produces
right.
a feedback loop to mother.
That's right.
To alert what is needed
exactly.
as far as nutrients, which
nutrients.
Is so, you know, it's techno science, really.
It's future science,
yeah.
for sure.
So I also, it occurred to me the other day that a baby, so that the aspect of sort of sonicity and of sound making when body feeding is so rich and nuanced. It is almost as if a baby echolocates its way to the breast. And, of course, fetuses are gestated in liquid environments, and hearing is the first sense to develop.
Yeah. I think smell is a big piece of it, of them being able to guide themselves to... Someone told me that breast milk smells like the amniotic fluid or something like that. There's a correlation between the way breast milk smells and their kind of subterranean or watery environment
yeah.
in amniotic fluid, but there's some sort of correlation between that. But yeah, I think it has something to do with smell. I don't know about sound, but that's a really interesting idea for sure.
Jessica, do you have thoughts on that count?
Oh, that is a really great thing to imagine, what the sound is like inside the amniotic fluid and how that relates to what you do with your mouth. I was thinking during Andrew's exercise, what about the encodedness of the mouth, that there's like shapes and that suggest sounds, but maybe it's not even necessarily an audible sound yet, but it's like a, you would see like a symbol of like a certain kind of feeling through the shape of the mouth. So when you're, I was thinking about those kind of almost like inner sounds.
Yes, it reminds me of the artist and mother Salome Shmuki, who was a voice on the previous Suckling Sounds episode, who described that her baby makes both mouth shape and sound of O when wishing to suckle. Mm. So there is the sense of
that's great.
Morphological antecedents.
I love that.
And she writes as well, I'll quote her, her book Dyslexia, chunking along a straight line at the crossing turning left, that in about the child's 8th to 12th week of life, a vowel-like gurgle or squeal, cooing, occurs regularly when the child is talked to or nodded at. Cooing sounds are generally similar acoustically to vowels produced when the tongue is low and back in the oral cavity, and are often produced when with rounding, that is, rounding of the lips. But again, the mouth, motioning to make mouth sounds,
amazing.
Sculpturing of the mouth, not even to produce sound, but of, in anticipation perhaps of future speech.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have Keza Niampeta Wang, newborn, here last time. And Jessica, when we played your piece, which is an imaginary conversation between mother, baby, and placenta, which we shall hear later, Keza began to make mouth sounds, mouth shapes, rather, in response to listening to it.
It was great to see some of the images from that afterwards.
Yes. Speaking of, perhaps we should play this most delicious track.
Sure.
And then we'll think with non-human animals as well.
Okay.
We were mentioning that this is very ASMR. In its way. Again, feedback loop. We're in the recess of the breast.
We're in the womb.
And the mouth cavity.
Yeah, the mouth cavity.
Linney was just describing the complexity of the mouth cavity as apparatus and how baby's mouth takes mother's nipple into its mouth.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes birthing people are told that body feeding is like a very natural, easy, intuitive process. But I found that in my experience feeding my two children that it wasn't that intuitive. I mean, I took a breastfeeding class a month before my first child was born. And, you know, definitely still had like a lot of questions around latching, which is like a big question mark for a lot of new parents who are body feeding. And so I think that this idea of, you know, latching, it really has to do with the architecture of the mouth, the ability of the tongue to actually perform a certain, like have a certain amount of flexibility and movement. And I do think that even for the child, it's like a learnt muscle. It's like something, it's a muscle that needs to be exercised. It's a learnt behavior that has a lot of biological, like we're born with a kind of understanding of how to do it naturally, but I do think that it does take coaching. And so oftentimes new like parents who are body feeding just give up early. And but I do think that there's something very sacred and probably a lot of unknown information that's being transmitted between a parent and the child that's body feeding. Like, I think it's really, it's mystical in some ways. And also because, you know, let's be real, that research around women's bodies is like really underfunded, and it's still this big mystery of like what women's bodies do. Like, we don't know a lot of like what's happening in that sacred space.
It's more elusive than consciousness.
Oh, it's a really good point, Emma.
And it is true. There are, I think, increasing studies done on how breastfeeding, body feeding rather, ties to speech acquisition, and that bottle feeding too soon or too often can lead to delayed language development.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's probably a lot of different things that are even unmeasured, like maybe like psychological and emotional development that we don't know around the difference between bottle-fed babies or breastfed babies, or maybe we'll find out that it's exactly the same. But the question is that the problem is that we have no idea. Nobody's doing the research. Nobody's funding that kind of research.
So Jessica, take us into this, into the speculative space of, say, mouth and breast now, in terms of how, and to help us fathom it, really.
Right, right. So one of the things that I would suggest to play with would be to move, to free up your larynx, to move up and down. And a really easy way to think of that is actually going back into a baby-like sound. You have to lift your larynx quite a bit. So if I just start talking more and more and more, like, even if I was still on same note, but still, but bringing the larynx up very as high as I can. And by doing that, and then you can go the other way too, just to feel the larynx move down really low, so you're getting, even if you're at the same pitch, but you just make your voice sound like you're in this really big space. So you can just play with that to kind of imagine the texture of a tiny larynx and what that felt like for you. You know, it's a different kind of sensation, the way the air moves through a very tiny space. And I think there's something very soothing and actually heightening of the sensation of texture in that smallness. So, I mean, it really has a lot of different effects, I think, psychologically and emotionally. And as you're saying, something beyond consciousness. You know, we could actually relate directly with our body intelligence or wisdom or science, this thing that's just so intricate and has so many properties and powers that maybe we don't usually give ourselves conscious access to, but which are still doing active things all the time, that we could actually use our voices to bounce off of that and to echolocate in a way, like you said, ourselves, maybe even echolocate our placenta. I think for a lot of us, we don't have the knowledge of what happened to our placenta, and maybe it was just thrown away, or we don't know what the life of that placenta was after it was born with us. But in many different forms of knowledge, the placenta comes with you throughout your whole life and actually can appear as different beings. Like some people say that, you know, their placenta takes the shape of a bird. So when they see this bird, they know that the person is nearby. So we could actually use our voices and these laryngeal movements to try to sing to our placenta, and also through singing try to listen to our placenta. That's some of the things that I was kind of playing with this incredible prompt from you, Emma. And it just really opened up a lot of worlds for me. Even though I've been making like baby sounds probably since I was a baby, I don't think I ever stopped. I was also like a long-term thumb sucker. So I think I always had this kind of idea that the baby sound was something that was like mine. It was accessible to me. It wasn't like something I had to leave behind. But I used that to different effects at different moments in my life.
And it's
true. Yeah, voices, so thank you so much for this moment.
Gosh, thank you, Jessica. I mean, it helps us to inhabit a sound world that in fact we haven't left behind, but can conjure again for ourselves. And actually, placentas, as we learned thanks to a radio lab episode, are productions made by the fetus, our foreign organs.
That's right. It's like it's a whole organ that you make when you're pregnant, and then it comes out. It's the second delivery, which nobody talks about, that you birth a child and then you birth a placenta,
right.
An organ, a whole organ. Yeah, I actually prepared my first placenta.
What did you do with it?
I brought it home and I basically deveined it and then seasoned it and I steamed it and then I steamed it and then dehydrated it.
And placed it where?
Oh, I took half of it, and when I dehydrated I ate it, and the other half I buried in my backyard.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's great.
What did it taste like?
Mm-hmm. Organ meat. It's very organ-y. It tastes like offal. Like, I'm not a big offal eater, but it's very like liver heavy, oval, like tastes like iron, which is what it is basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Feast.
Yeah.
There's an episode.
That's right.
And an issue of mold.
I mean, it's a bit cannibalistic, isn't it, to eat this organ that you've grown alongside your child.
I think it still qualifies as vegan.
Oh, it is non-animal.
Extraterrestrial.
It is extraterrestrial. Nearly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting you know, because again, just information that was withheld or not really spoken about to me as somebody who identifies as like a cis woman, like I just never knew anything about my placenta until I was pregnant and then had to read about it, because nobody talks about your placenta really. But the placenta is also an interface, like it interfaces between the uterus mm-hmm. and the child, and so really becomes this connective organ that provides nutrients and other kind of foundational things for the growing child.
Sort of like the first microbiome.
As a cis male, I would say like the placenta I think has been shunned because it's this material that would actually allow us to remember that we're of the body of a woman. You know, and I think that's like part of the reason why it's this like taboo material in our society, and like something which is like literally, it's like extremely, not just like a miracle. I mean, it's a fucking biological miracle, but it's also nutritious, right? And like many like different cultures, like you were saying, Jessica, have all kinds of ways of understanding this material, but like we treat it literally as trash, right? It just gets like tossed. And I wonder, like, you know, what it means to throw that link away, you know, what it says about our culture and why we do that. It doesn't seem accidental.
No. And I mean,
it seems like a very meaningful gesture, actually, just not the good kind.
In cultures that plant placentas, it is the first burial that takes place post-birth, but that returns itself to the earth. And
Yeah, the next issue of Mold will be about our relationship with the soil. And I listened to this podcast with the agronomist Dr. Ratan Lal, and he talks about the divine nature of soil and how it is the only thing in this universe, the only material in this universe that can transform death into life. And so I think that this kind of circular understanding and the spiritual understanding of like our relationship with soil, whether it's burying a placenta as the first death and that has given us a certain kind of life, I think is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And soil as an organ.
Yeah.
Kind of brings up ownership too, in that sense of property, land, how we, you know, the placenta belonging to the fetus. And, you know, even in a way when you were telling your story about eating your baby's placenta, you know, I was thinking about, is it your placenta or is it the baby's? And, you know, the tension that we have around those kind of concepts of ownership. Because we're indoctrinated into a very imperialist and authoritarian view of property.
Well, I also think that this idea that a baby is separate from the mother or the birthing person the moment that they birthed is also a bit of a fallacy, right? Like,
yeah.
I think about my daughter who is now 6 months and is starting to eat solids, but again, as an exploratory thing as opposed to a nutritional thing, like not only did I gestate this human for 9 months, but then I like body fed this person for 6 months to the point where like literally she is made out of me, which is an insane concept. Mm-hmm. Like every time I look at her, I'm like, this is crazy. Yes. That you are this thriving, crawling, talking, eating person that like I created with my own body, like the physicality of my own body, which is really interesting.
It's interphysiology.
Oh, yes.
Andros, it's thanks to you. So that we had come into conversation with a beekeeper, Che Ashley, and her colleague Taryn in Boston last time and began to speak about how bees suckle. Mm. Learning that it is similarly a very multi-mouth procedure to make honey, in nectar being passed from mouth to mouth. across a chain of bees. Bees being like planetary wet nurses.
I love
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just a little bit too poetic that it's so sweet.
Yeah. Honey.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, Emma actually asked me because I was pumping when I got to the station. It was just time for me to pump, and I thought it would be nice to do it on air. But she asked me if I had tasted it, and my breast milk, and I was like, oh, yeah, but I have a sense of disgust around it. It's sweet, and obviously very nutritious, but there's a sense of disgust around tasting my own bodily fluids, which I haven't really reconciled in my mind, but... It is interesting that we do create this very sweet nectar. Humans create sweet nectar.
I noticed that they're starting to sell freeze-dried human breast milk now.
Oh, for children or for humans? For adults?
For just adults. Huh. Yeah. And I brought it up to my mom the other day, and she had a really funny reaction. She was like, I don't want you to take that because... I'm the only person whose milk that you've drank.
Ah, mom. Fascinating.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Like, talk about the sacred.
So it's the new new frontier of monogamy.
Exactly. I had no idea it was there.
I love that reaction that your mother had. I think that's really, really powerful. Yeah, I don't know how it'd feel if my children were like, yeah, I'm going to just drink this stranger's breast milk. I guess I'd be okay with it. I mean, there's also...
What if they told you that it was sweeter?
Oh, you know, I'd be angry.
I mean, that would be it. They would be out.
So rude.
Out on the street.
Yeah. No, I donate breast milk to a breast milk bank because if you're a lactating person that needs support... there are places that you can go to get human breast milk for your child. So it's not an unheard of thing. And I think that for a lot of lactating people, like they would prefer to feed their children other people's breast milk as opposed to formula. Or maybe sometimes some children have allergies to other animal milks, which formula is based on. So... yeah,
we've run out of time, but next time I think we should pick up where we leave off here and begin to truly speak about interspecies infant feeding,
which I'm very curious. I want to hear all about that.
Yes, perhaps as a sign off, we will listen to Jessica's Sound World imaginary conversation between mother, baby, and placental spirit.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Andros. What happened?
Well, I don't know. I think now we're on the air, just me and you.
Okay, so bizarre.
Hang on. What do we do, everyone? We have this. We're looking for the placenta.
To release our friends.
No, wait. But
wasn't Emma interested in you hang on. Making some kind of vocal contribution to this discussion? Well, there we go.
Oh, Recording to this computer.